Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, fans, and subscribers to the SDR Disco Call Show. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. If you're new to the show, what is this all about and why should you listen to this? So we work in the world of sales development. So people that love doing prospecting, booking meetings to help out our counterpart in sales. And the industry that we work in is tech sales. If you're thinking about software, that's the land that we're in. And obviously, there's a lot of shows out there which helps with tactics, prospecting, all that cool stuff. But what we love to do is really meet the people and hear their stories to help inspire you into what I call happy sellers. And as a reminder, if you're watching this on our local YouTube channel, please make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. And if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, please make sure that you give us a rating and also share this with your friends and DM them and let them know how cool this episode is. So with this episode, I'm really, really happy to bring on this guest. A little bit of a backstory. As we're always scrolling on LinkedIn, I'm always looking for interesting people. And this person caught my eye because firstly, they had a musical affinity on their profile. That's a good start. But I was reading their about section and it was really cool the way that they were sharing their story as to, you know, what they've been through and the amount of resilience that they've demonstrated. And the cool thing is they work in tech sales. So it made it a complete dream come true for me. So without further ado, guest, could you please introduce yourself? Who are you? Where are you based in the world? What do you do for work? And what does that company do?
Thank you, Neil. Hi, my name is Julia Vadalaska. I'm Ukrainian. That's why the surname is so difficult to pronounce. I'm based in Hoorn, Netherlands, right now. So the company I've been working for the last 1.5 years is Chronify, and they do interview scheduling. So our target is talent acquisition team.
Perfect. Well, Julia, an absolute pleasure to have you on board, and thank you for sharing your time with us. And could I ask, so as you said, you're speaking to talent acquisition. What other type of things or problems or things are you looking to help them with whilst you're at Chronify, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. So the main problem is that interview scheduling for talent acquisition people takes a lot of time. Aside of human mistakes and time zones. So what we are trying to help them with is to improve time to hire by scheduling faster, but also to schedule all types of interviews in several seconds to compare calendars and show the...
I love that. Great pitch. I freaking love it. So a question I love to ask all my guests, Julia, is outside of sales, what are your passions, your hobbies, and your interests? Because you've got quite a few, but please let us know. What does Julia like to get up to outside of work?
So as you can see, I have a lot of plans. Yep. And recently I started... So I'm a plant maniac.
Okay.
I need a confession club. I have so many plants that my husband told me, like, do you think it's enough? And I said, yeah, of course, but we still have one floor.
Yeah.
Above.
Oh, wow.
So this is my recent hobby, and it helps me a lot with the mental health and mental being, because when you're doing some work with plants or compositions or just water them, what happens, you need to focus on what you're doing and ground yourself, but also like green colors help a lot.
Okay.
Other than that, I started painting recently. I'm not a painter. I have no idea how to do that correctly, but I just love
painting. Yeah.
Feeling of the paint, the feeling that the paint gives. And yeah, music. I used to be a singer in a rock band, and we 7 years back in Ukraine, in Kharkov. So right now I'm just singing karaoke, but who knows? Maybe I'll find a band again. And yep. Yeah, reading. I'm reading a lot. I have a lot of books. So in a couple of words, if it was a couple. Those are my hobbies.
Thank you so much for sharing. So obviously we've got the musicality, we've got some, you know, the plants as well. And it feels like, you know, you've got a bit of an artistic sort of background and flair going on to you. So I freaking love that. So normally what we do at this point of the show is we go to our guest's LinkedIn profile. And as a reminder for everyone, you'll always be able to find our guest's LinkedIn profile within the show notes. So if you want to connect with them, pick the brain on anything me and Julie have discussed today, feel free to reach out. And again, mentioning like it was your about section, which really caught my eye, and I would like to dive into this in a little while further. But you know, you've had quite a lot of cool experiences. So if we go back to like way back in the day, so you've been like a flyering agent, children animator, sales rep, customer support, account executive, you know, like as you alluded to for the last year and a bit, you've been an SDR at Cronify. So I'd love to ask, and for our audience, Julia, like walk us through, how did Julia get into sales? And how did you end up where you are today? And obviously, there are elements of this story where you've had to go through changes of countries and stuff like that. So please share and let us know your story.
Thank you so much for this question. I just need to find the point where to start.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when I was a kid.
Please do share. We're all ears.
When I was a kid, I went for a market with my grandma. So she did some clothes and we were trying to sell it. And for some reason, it went natural.
Mm.
I think because it was winter and it was warm clothes and we were standing in the place where there were a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying always to get in touch with people and start communicating. So I think this was the first sales experience in my life. Mm. And then I started noticing that I'm really easygoing with people and I like communicating with people and I'm a very open person.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love the Dutch culture. I don't know if you heard about this or not, but they are really straight.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
That's true. And I think I like it, and I'm not the same because still not the same, but I'm trying to, because I think it's the best quality when you don't need to think about and try to guess what people think, and you just be
straight to the point. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. As a flyering agent, I was a very bad worker, honestly. So I needed to gather money.
Mm-hmm.
To buy a phone, the first cell phone with my boyfriend, because we were so in love that we wanted to be at all the time. So we've been working for 3 months.
Mm.
Two of those, we were just throwing away all the flyers in the garbage.
So you take them and then you place them in the trash and then go get paid, right?
Not only that, we also put some bits and pieces on the road because we knew that the supervisor, they could come and check us, like, that's how I started thinking more strategically. If you do something, you need to think about this several times. And I think the most important sales experience where I would really say that I started my sales career was when I was 21. I was a regional representative of the trademark Pandis. Pandis is a
cosmetics.
Cosmetics. Thank you for the cosmetologists for sugaring. And I opened my school. And at that time, I was the youngest representative in Ukraine because it's like this trademark, they have the name. So the marketing works amazing there.
Yeah.
And when I learned somewhere on the internet that they are actually entering the Ukrainian market, and I lived in Kharkov at this time, it's like the huge city, I started calling them. And I think this was the first experience with cold calling.
Yeah. Tell us more.
Yeah, it was, I didn't know what to do. I just knew that I want that and they need a person and I have some experience and I have the biggest, I think that I was the best for them because I wanted that badly.
Yeah.
So I started calling them and they said, no, we are not trying to find someone in Kharkiv. We are just trying to put this to build the network here in Kyiv, in the capital of Ukraine. Mm. So it lasted for 2 weeks. I was calling every 2 days.
Oh, wow.
Saying, hey, hi, guys, what do you have a list? What do I need to do? What are the updates? Oh, your trainer went to Hungary. I want to go to Hungary as well. So I was like pain in the ass.
You were persistent with them.
Yes. Let's say that. I was consistent and persistent. So they invited me. I think they were very bored and they said like, okay, let her come to Kyiv and then we will see. So I came to Kyiv. And they said that, yeah, I'm just too young. Mm. Because 35 was the age of the person who was the youngest before me. What? So they wanted to find a businessman, a businesswoman, a business person who had at least some experience and not the green Julia.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but after a day, one day spending there, we agreed and signed the agreement. So I needed to buy first a bunch of products. And I think the paycheck was, I don't remember, but at that time it was, I could buy a car.
Wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it was not a very good car, but like.
Enough. Yeah.
And that is where I started negotiating. Because when I started talking with them and trying to order everything I wanted, of course, I borrowed money at that point. I gathered all my friends helped me to get this done. Not all the positions were there. So I couldn't buy everything that they had. Mm. They had only half. And I said, if you have a half, why should I do the 100%?
Mm.
So I will do the half as well. And this is how I cut expenses.
That's smart. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I don't know how it happened, but all of a sudden I loved it. And we had a lot of exhibitions. And in 1 month, I needed to buy a place, a stand on the exhibition convention center and stand there with the product, sell the product that I didn't have yet and work with the material that I haven't even tried myself.
Yeah.
This was the way I worked that time, and it worked well. So I was a representative for 7 or 8 years. And then I sold my business because I got really tired of working with people. And at that point, you believe maybe you remember that you needed all of a sudden to become not only a good professional, but also like a content maker because Instagram kicked in.
Yeah.
And I hated this.
I really hated.
I like photographing, filming, then composing.
That's a lot of work, right?
Yeah. And at that point, I didn't understand why should I do that because I know what to do and I know how to work. And I have a school and I was creating a championships on this topic. Nevertheless, I got tired and I was the first in Ukraine for 5 years in the row. And I was very proud of myself. I'm actually still proud of myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then I thought that I need to practice my English because my education was in languages. So English was my first language and German was my second. So I don't speak German, but I understand a lot. And I thought, okay, what's the best way to practice it and how can I use it wisely? And I thought that I need to start working in IT.
Hmm.
And the first position where I could start was a support agent. It's a Ukrainian company, but they're already on European in the US market. It's reply.io. So I started working there and I've been there for almost 3 years. It was amazing. Love this company. I love everyone there still. And I attended all the events after I quit. Even I'm still in touch with so many people from this company.
Love that.
And then I got a second child. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, what I'm good at?
Mm.
And my husband, he said, okay, I think he's a software developer. He said, I think that you need to try sales because I think mm-hmm. you'll be good sales with all the qualities that you have, persistence, consistency, blah, 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 blah. You need to try that. And I started.
Mm.
And then the war began. I started, I've been already for a couple of years account executive because my friend invited me. So if you don't mind, I will tell this story.
Yeah, please share, please share. This is what we're here for. We're here for your story, Julia.
Thank you. So I tried to remember, do I have anyone that is a sales representative? What do they actually do? What is like day-to-day life? What's the routine?
Mm.
And I had a friend, Daniel. I still have him. And I called him and I said, Daniel, could you elaborate? What actually you do? What is it you do? And he said, why are you asking? And I said, because, yeah, I want to try.
You're interested, yeah.
Yes, it's the best timing because I'm going to quit and we are hiring for another person that will replace myself. And this is how I started working for a bit as an SDR.
Mm.
And then we had the external team, SDR team. And then I became account executive.
Mm.
And then the war started.
Mm.
So when it happened, nobody knew. The first thing I remember, I woke up in the morning because of the bombarding and because of the bombs and my kids were asleep. It was 5 a.m. I woke up and I was like, should I go to work today? Like, it's the shock that you cannot describe. And we didn't know what happens and whatnot. My father joined the army.
Wow.
He decided to go as a volunteer because he went through the Afghanistanian war as Ukraine was a part of USSR and he was in the army there. So my father joined the army. My husband has diabetes. There is no food in the supermarket.
Oh, wow.
I needed to stand why I'm mentioning my husband's disease because I was the one who was going outside to stand in line to get into the shop to buy at least something because if something happens, it will heal for me, but for him, it's a big question because diabetes type 1. At the point, it was hard. We didn't have products on the shelves. I needed to stand for 5-6 hours. I saw rifles, bombs, and shit. There was a video when the rocket hit the building on the square in Kharkiv, and I was standing less than in 1 kilometer from that place in the line to the shop.
Wow.
So it was a lot. Well, I'm very grateful for the company Actiomics at that point and MageCom. They helped us to escape. They gave us time. There was no pressure that you need to work.
Mm.
But while I was escaping Ukraine, I was fleeing it at that point. I was closing deals. Because the calls are the calls. I needed to sell developers. And I had scheduled calls and I needed to be there.
Okay, hell.
Yes, it was. But at that point, you don't understand that. You don't realize that it's too much. You have the list of tasks, you need to do them, and then you need to pack and go to the next city or to the next country. It's not that you realize all of that. Then in a couple of years, it hits. But in the moment...
Yeah, like there's like just a pause because I just need to compartmentalize this and like just process this like for the audience. So just to kind of like, because I want to hear this story. I want our listeners to know kind of like what was this going down. But let's just kind of like recap this. So, you know, this young girl back in the day with a boyfriend, like getting a flying agent to buy a phone so he can be in contact with each other. And then, you know, moving on to that sales rep at the Safe Cosmetics, being this young 21-year-old, the youngest person, cold calling them, bugging the hell out of them till they gave you a job, then building your business and, you know, taking on this entrepreneurial sort of journey, but doing that and then realizing, you know, it wasn't the challenge that you're looking for. You're looking to move out. you start speaking to a friend about like sales roles, but then you, you know, wanted to get into the IT space. So you join reply.io, spend some time there. And then, you know, looking forward to the next sort of position and then speaking to your friend and saying, hey, what's sales? And they're saying, oh, we've actually got something coming up. You know, this could be a really good fit. And then you say you wake up one morning and you realize your country is at war and you ask yourself the question, what do I do? Do I go to work and et cetera? You've got bombs falling out. You're in the square, like queuing up. And to your point, you're still doing work. You're closing deals because, again, you're not able to process or comprehend what's going on. You're trying to find some sort of structure to your life. Have I got that right so far, Julia?
Yes.
Please continue.
Thank you. So closing deals was as part of the to-do list, as I said. And my friends, I have a lot of friends, and my best friend, Jackie, she had been living at this point for 5-6 years here in the Netherlands. And I visited her several times, and she invited my family to the Netherlands. She found the house. She did everything for us, and we just needed to go from the point A to the point B. This was our task. I didn't think about the work at this point and job and how I'll be working in the Netherlands to the Ukrainian company. I was just surviving at that point. And my father, so I started doing a lot of volunteering work. Yeah, there is stuff because, not to mention, Ukrainian soldiers, they don't have anything. And all the money, I don't know, it's politics and we will not discuss that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I needed to volunteer a lot. In a couple of months, I realized that I'm very tired because the war started in February and it was already July. And my manager, he didn't want to give me a vacation because he said to me that you're the only sales account executive on this project, and we are not doing great, and we need to close deals, and then you can go. But I started realizing that I was doing a lot of silly mistakes, typos, forget about the meetings. So I was exhausted. And I said, okay, then I'll quit because I don't have any other choice.
Mm.
After I quit it, I met a couple of people here in the Netherlands and I started working as an SDR. So one was the person who had been an SDR at that point for 20 years. Mm. So He was an external SDR person who was helping to other companies to get leads. And the other one was a great friend of mine as well. He started a marketing agency and I helped them.
Mm. Yeah.
So this is how I got I got the feeling how everything works here, because let's be like honest. Ukrainian IT and Ukrainian way of working and European IT.
Two different things.
It's two different stories. It's like you cannot compare. So I, at that point, I understood that I couldn't be an account executive. It's not possible because I don't know how the market works. It's very easy. But I needed to find a place where we need to live because the house we've been living at, the house of the people, they were selling it. And to rent something, to find a rental house in the Netherlands, I don't know, it's easier to find the Dragon X. It's so challenging. So I needed to find a house. I needed to find a job because my husband at that point, he was working and he was providing. He was breadwinner, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And it took me, it took me 5 months to find a job. So it was 2022 and the layoffs just started.
Recession, yeah.
And how can I be on the market with SDRs and account executives from Google and other big, huge companies with a lot of experience. So I was stressed as hell. I didn't know where to start, what to do. And I got 2 job interviews in the first month, and I got rejected because I was overqualified. And I'd never heard about this. I was like, I want to do this. I want to do this because of that and that and that and that. So I was trying to negotiate with them and work with it like as if it was an objection. But I think they were just... The companies I've been talking to, I think they were just afraid that I got bored, and to hire a person, it takes a lot of money and budget and blah, blah, and time. So, and then I went to Ukraine, visited my father. So I thought, I didn't know whether I see him or not again. He was on his vacation, and my family, we went to leave to visit him. And when I came back in 2 weeks, I did the job search, was the full-time job. So my husband, he had his calls and he was sitting for 8 hours, and I was sitting the same amount of time, just applying, having calls, applying, doing some changes in my CV, trying to find connections on LinkedIn. And it lasted for 2 months. At this point, I thought that I couldn't find anything. I was thinking, really, I was already applying to the delivery service to go and do deliveries. And it was absolutely fine. It's not a problem. It was just not that I expected. I thought that it's easy, right? There are so many vacancies, job openings. But yeah, it was a huge lesson that I got as well in terms of consistency and resilience.
And if, like, I'm not normally, as our audience, I'm not normally like speechless for words, and I'm just trying to mentally process where your mind must have been through all of this chaos, to an extent trauma, stress, and like my heart and hat goes off to you in terms of resilience. Like, I've never experienced anything like what you have gone through. The question that I wanted to ask is, before we move on with the story, where you're sitting there with your husband and you, like you said, you're doing these 8 hours a day, you're looking for jobs, you're applying, you're updating your CVs. What was the internal monologue of Julia saying in your head? Because I've been through some stressful times and trauma in my life. And it's how we talk to ourselves when we're going through that. It can either be like, the world is woe, like, why me? Or it's, what am I going to do about this? But this, there is that in-between bit, Julia, of talking to yourself and trying to... how was you processing? What was that, Julia, in your head saying when you were getting to that point?
Great question. So I think I was just doing without thinking. But when I was blue and I felt restless and hopeless, I said to myself that I'm lucky to be here and I'm in the better position that everyone I know. I'm in the safe country. I have friends. My kids are safe. Yes, my apartment, the bomb got into my apartment. But thanks God I was not there, right? I was not there. The apartment, it costs nothing already because of the war. So why should I think about this? And I was trying to concentrate on the good things. Like, I need to do that and that and that and that. Update my CV, go for a walk with my kids. And then I got several calls from my friends, from Ukraine, I mean. And I was like, okay, I have nothing to complain about. Nothing. It's the level of difficulties that I need to resolve to go through. It's just the difficulties of the people who are safe and sound. It's not the difficulties that the people that I know are going through. And I think this got me a lot of strength.
But again, like, Dude, I'm feeling teary, man. Like, this is hitting me in the feels. And the reason why I say this is, you know, for a lot of myself included, and probably with a lot of our audience, like, we have gone through recessions, we've gone through pandemics, we've gone through personal things in life with losses and family and stuff like that. But this environment that you are in, to your point, like, a lot of us, we can't really complain. You know, like, where I hear, you know, I'm in coaching calls or I'm speaking to friends and they're like, life is shit or something terrible has happened. But to this extent, no, like, it doesn't compare, right? And the reason that I'm bringing this up, because on a personal level, I've gone through some fucking hard times. I'm not going to lie, right? But to your point of trying to focus on the positives that are happening within the chaos that you're in. And a lot of us mentally, sometimes we can focus on what is going wrong. But there's this term that I heard last year when I was going through a tough time, which was looking for the glimmers throughout your day. So, you know, the interaction that you have with somebody that made you smile, or, you know, you were able to pay off that bill, or somebody gave you a compliment or some really cool feedback. As you can hear, I'm getting choked up on this. And it's training your mind to look for those glimmers, because there's this thing called confirmation bias. Confirmation bias, like, I'll give you an example, Julia. I wake up in the morning, today's going to be a shit day. You're programming your brain to look for all the shit things that happen, and you're waiting for the bad things to happen. So from a mindset standpoint, that's why some people do affirmations or journaling in the morning. It's to program their brain to look for the positives, to try and have a positive mindset. And I'm not saying, dude, if you're going through like war, don't have a positive and happy mindset. Like, that shit's fucking difficult, right? And we're not going to lie about that. But it's, I love how you are looking for the positives. And I think the other element to this is your support network, the people around you, your friends, catching up with them. This is really important as well. And again, going through a really hard time last year, and I have to give a big shout out to my friend, Charlotte. I got to a point in my life where I was just like, why is all this shit happening? And I was really depressed and I was going through a lot of traumatic things. And I was being pushed to my limits. And she handed me this beautiful book and by a guy called Viktor Frankl, which is Man's Search for Meaning. And I'll just give a quick synopsis on the book, which was, this guy was a psychologist who was going through World War II, and the guy got sent to Auschwitz. And what he was doing was, he didn't know if his wife or his family were killed or not. He had no idea, you know? And he saw the German soldiers, and he also saw the prisoners. And over a period of a couple of like months, years, whatever it was, he saw the darkest side of man, both from a soldier standpoint, but also what prisoners were going through, right? But he was able to objectively study these people, process why they were acting the way that they were, but also looking outside of himself and saying why he was acting in certain ways and how he was looking at all this trauma, death, you know, all this fucked up shit happening. But the key thing that he came to, because like, he survived, he got out, you know, he went back home, was he says man has to be, and I'm not putting men in terms of gender, but people in general, was you have to be worthy of your suffering. And what he means by that is, by going through these traumatic things, is this is what's building you and your character and your life and your story. So, and normally with these people that have gone through these traumatic things are more empathetic, right? You know, when some people say, do you want to choose peace or do you want to choose violence? Those people that could kill somebody will not choose violence because they know to the extent they could kill someone if they wanted to, or they, and the context I'm putting this in is, we could hurt people when we're hurt. But when we choose to show empathy and kindness, even when people are being horrible to us, that takes a lot of strength. I know we're getting really deep into this, but the point for my listeners is, we may go through tough times and we may go through horrible experiences, but it does build you. And if you come out on the other end stronger, that is how you are worthy of your suffering. Again, I cannot relate to the extent of what you have gone through. My heart goes out to you, and respect and admiration, Julia. But dude, yeah, sorry, I went off there on a little bit of a tangent.
No,
but yeah, kind of like, what was next? What was happening with Julia? Like, what's the next part chapter of this story?
Thanks for adding those those kind words. And also, I think that I love that kind of discussions when we go depth. And also, you know, I think that what I wanted to add is that it made me kinder than I was. Because I saw a lot of people who were very kind to me. Just a hug, just a smile. As an example, we left only with one bag of clothes. So everything that I had, everything I lost. And it's not about the money or monitor or the TV. It's about the photos of grandma and grandpa that are not digital. And I don't have them anymore. Or the memories that I had in this apartment, or my first drawing, or the piece of hair of my daughter. All the things that you cannot replace, you cannot buy for money. So I left with one bag. I had my jacket on me and jeans and sweater. And I had one pair of jeans. So like the pair that the clothes that I could change. So, and all that I had in 1 month, people gave me. And people were just around silently bringing some eggs or to our house because we were not speaking the same language. We went to Friesland, and a lot of people here, especially like the older generation, they do speak only Frisian language, not even Dutch. So my main take was that it's not about loss. It's about what you gain and what you receive. So for me, the main lesson was that the people who are around you is the biggest treasure that you have. And this aligns with the sales a lot to me, because usually when someone says, I hate salespeople, they're talking about that salespeople who don't actually admire people, love people, and don't care about people. Or at least they don't know how, right? They didn't have enough training. But if you care about people and you show that, this is how to be a good salesperson, to me, at least. Sorry, I went...
No, dude, I freaking love it. You're right, because in like tying this back to sales, the best salespeople that I've had, like I went to London this week, and a sales leader said to me, like, Neil, what are like good traits of an SDR? And I said, it's really hard because it's different for everyone and it depends on the person. But my first point was empathy. I said, SDRs who have a high level of empathy and understanding will have a better chance of connecting with their prospects, having meaningful conversations, and being able to have active listening and be able to, you know, really know what it feels like for that person. So empathy is a really good trait. A second one I said was self-awareness. SDRs who are self-aware of how they are performing, their strengths, their weaknesses, their flaws, their anxieties, these people are able to have better coaching because they know where they need to work on themselves to help improve. I said, those with a lack of empathy and a lack of self-awareness struggle a hell of a lot and typically might not be the nicest people when dealing with sales. And, you know, within sales, money is a big commodity and it is a big driver for people, and it can bring about the worst in people as well. So no, I 100% agree with you. It's those people. And I think equally in sales, the circle that you're around, like your team, your leadership, this is all important. Like, it's your culture within a company. And I'm really like grateful to say that I've been in some really cool freaking cultures where people empower each other. And equally, I've been in places which have not been that so great. Right. So I think that also, you know, if any sales leaders or, you know, founders are listening to this, you really got to watch your culture and how it, you know, inspires a nice melting pot to bring about that sort of stuff. Sorry, again, I've kind of gone off on a bit of a tangent. But okay, so to kind of bring it back in into the story, so you know, like this one suitcase, like literally the clothes on your back, you've got these people supporting you, bringing you aid, bringing you stuff to help you out. What happened next?
Next, I found a job.
Woohoo!
And this was the first interview where I was not 100% prepared.
Hmm.
I thought it was an agency and I got confused because I had several calls. And honestly, at that point, I was already tired of that shit. And the interview process went smoothly. And in 1 week, I got a job. 1 week. Because we didn't need to schedule for a long time. It was really, and they needed a person really, really fast. But the problem was that I needed to go to my work, and the office is in Amsterdam, one of the offices. I need to go by train. And the trains, I know that they cost less than in the UK, but still it was expensive. So for me, it was €22 per day to go back and forth.
Yeah.
And I needed to go every day because the first week, and I couldn't tell to my manager that I don't have money
to travel. Yeah.
To travel.
Yeah.
So on the fourth day of my traveling, I went without payment and I was sitting there biting my nails and thinking, okay, what if they catch me right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
What will I say? And I said, okay, I will tell the truth. Like, here is the contract. Here is my bill. You can write me a fine on it or anything, but I will pay it in months. I don't have money.
Mm.
It was tough. It was really tough at that point. And the food, we didn't eat meat every day because, again, we needed to pay rent. And we found a rental house, but we found it. We overpaid around €500 per month because we needed desperately a house. And we were saying yes to anything that we could find. And my father was still fighting. And I started my job there, and it went well. It went great. The team was amazing. The manager is very supportive and still is very supportive. So nothing changed at this point. But I got notified that the house that we were renting, they are selling it. And I have 2 months to find another 3 months to find another rental place. And at that point, my husband and I were sad and we were thinking, okay, it's go through the hell again, change the school for the kids. And it's very stressful. And they've been through a lot of stress. My son was stuttering. So he started talking when the war started. He was two. And at 2.5, he started talking a lot here. And he was stuttering because of that. And like, so the kids were traumatized and I needed to pay attention to that as well. So we decided to buy a house.
Okay.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? With everything else going on, we might as well just, you know, do this. I hear you.
Yeah, it was a crazy idea, but it was the only option for us because this is how we go through all the steps we need to go through. But at least we do that once and that's it. But we were refugees at that point. We didn't have any status. So we needed to change the status. And then it was so stressful because our financial agent was a stupid monkey. So he didn't say me anything about the change of the status and all that things. So it was, again, a bunch of stress. And I thought that we will be paying the fine because we needed to change the status in 2 weeks. So from those who are from the Netherlands listening to us, everyone knows how much time it takes to change the status and to get the residence permit. It is at least 3 months.
Yeah, and I can attest to that because I was an SDR manager for a team in Amsterdam. And when I had team members moving to Amsterdam to take the role, like, dude, for somebody that lives in London where it's pretty relatively easy to get a flat and get an apartment and all that, the amount of BS and bureaucracy and get permits and everything like that, I was like, dang, why can't you say, oh, I haven't got my apartment yet? So what do you mean you haven't got your apartment yet? Visa, da-da-da-da-da. And so I kind of know to an extent. It's not freaking easy in Dan, but sorry, continue.
Yeah, thanks. Now I feel that I'm talking to a person who knows that.
Yeah.
Can relate. So I had 3 weeks. And if I cannot do that on time, I needed to pay fine 10% from the amount of the money I needed to pay for the house. So I got permit in 2 weeks. I was calling again, cold calling.
Every day
I was calling. I think they knew me already. And I was telling the same story. And then I said, okay, where can I find those people who work there? LinkedIn. So I found everyone on LinkedIn. I messaged them and I started calling their numbers.
Yeah.
I didn't have just a lot of money to pay. I needed to do that. And again, it was the situation where I needed to do something. Otherwise, it will be very hard. And some person answered the phone and said, yeah, I know that there is like a list with priorities and they can move you, but nobody tells anything about this list. But if you continue doing that, they will move you and make your permit as a priority. And this happened. I don't know which step exactly worked. Have no idea. But in 2 weeks, I got my cards. And this is, I think, the biggest achievement.
Yeah, because it is literally a case of do or die. You know, I have no place to live. I have no nothing. Pay this fine when money is already tight as it is. Like, you're putting into to very difficult circumstances. And I think a lesson that I've learned, and I say this to my friends when they're going through shit, is when you hit rock bottom, that is when you figure out how creative you really are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Because you work with what you have. You look for avenues that you may have not even contemplated because you wasn't at that level before that happened. And your creativity, your ingenuity, your rational thinking. I loved how the fact of like you went onto LinkedIn to find these people to get those connections. Because yeah, dude, sales teaches you a lot of things that you can use in your personal life. And I can align that to when I'm doing complaints. I can find the founder of that company or the MD and I'll be like, dude, something didn't go down. Can you help sort this out? Or, you know, finding out the processes or finding a solution or stuff like that. Like LinkedIn is that, you know, it's the world of possibilities where you can find answers versus like Google, right? You can find the people and you can contact them as well. I freaking love that. Julia, dude, like your story, I think the key theme for me here is what I've learned in today's chapter of the show is the amount of resilience you have, dude, and the amount of mental strength and physical strength, like being a parent, having a partner, dealing with war, finding a job, finding a place to live. And again, as I alluded to at the beginning of the show, reading your bio is what got me hooked to want to learn more about you. And I'm very grateful, you know, that you've been able to share this story. And I think a lot of us that are listening or watching are thinking like, yeah, my problems aren't as bad. And you give us like some perspective, right?
Yeah,
go ahead, please, sorry.
I think I heard that a lot, and I heard that a lot from my friends. Just, I don't want you to think that I think that your words don't mean anything to me. It's just, I heard that a lot, but I didn't feel that way. I think, and I still feel and know that everyone can. It's not that I have something different in my brain or I have six fingers. The girl from Ukraine, not speaking at the time English, that I was not confident to speak. I could, but I needed to practice more and more to remember the language because it's my mother tongue is Russian and Ukrainian, but not English. Everyone can. It's just how hard do you really want this? Is it something that you need to do and you want to do? Or is it something that someone tells you that you need to do and you pretend that you actually care?
Yeah. And it's strange and at the same time comforting where you said a lot of people tell you this, but you didn't really feel that. And like, again, like a real life scenario this week where I went to London and I did a presentation in front of a company where I shared my journey from SDR to CEO and the peaks and troughs and everything. And one of the SDRs just said, you know, it's really cool to think how resilient you were when you went through tough times and stuff wasn't working. And it's really cool to hear about your music career and like all the shit that you had to, because the music video I showed them was a music video that I recorded a month coming out of hospital after having pneumonia. Similar to you, how you said, you don't think you're being resilient. You don't think you're being strong when you're in it and you're going through it. And I think, you know, like 2 years back when I went through a year of losing 7 friends to death, it screwed me up. Like really screwed me up. Yeah. No. It happens. And I think I've spoken about this on the show before. But like, I'm a big advocate for therapy and I have a weekly therapist. Shouts out to my guy, Dave.
Same.
Where I've gone through a lot of PTSD sort of stuff and I've come out of it. And sometimes I'll sit there with Dave where, like you said, that the house permit, like the fine, not having enough money for the ticket. I've experienced things like that as well. And when those things happen in a succession, just one after the fucking another, right? And sometimes I sit down with my therapist and I just said, I'm just tired. I'm just like, it never stops. And then I sometimes just say to him, I just want to get your perspective on this situation. Am I going crazy? Or am I like on par with what normally happens to people in life? And Dave sometimes says to me, he's like, Neil, you've been through a lot, right? And I'm surprised that you're still standing and you're still sitting here. He said, you've got a lot of resilience and strength. And I said, but it doesn't feel like that when you're going through it. It's just a case of you just do and you just try to get to the next day and you try to get to bed on time and you try to make sure that your kid gets fed. Yeah, we were really going on a different path on this episode. I love it. But yeah, I can relate to that element of, yeah, Neil, you've done so many cool things. I'm like, have I? I'm just doing, you know? And I think to your lesson, like, do you really want it? And are you committed to do it versus just people telling you doing it? And I think the one thing I am proud of myself is whatever I say I'm going to do is what I'm going to do. That's what my friends know me for. They're like, Neil, you're the only guy that we know that when you say you're going to go do this thing, this podcast or launch a business or, you know, have your kid and go on this holiday, like you do it because you want to do it. You know, intrinsically comes in from, and I think it stems from going through those tough times and knowing really what you want and you're willing to do anything to get it. So I hope today's episode for our listeners, this is a motivation boost and a reminder to go get it, because life is not promised. Like tomorrow is definitely not promised. And I think, again, with a lot of our listeners in recent episodes, I'm really looking at philosophy such as Stoicism and understanding the mortality that we have with our life. You know, you only have one chance to make it happen. And horrible things will happen to you, but don't let the world make you cold. Don't let it, you know, screw your mind, because there are going to be some tough shit that we go through. But yeah, dude, we're going on a deep one here.
I love it. I love it. When I think for me, I didn't have any choice.
Hmm.
So when you understand this, I love the phrase that you said, you have only one chance. Mm. You're not practicing. Mm. You don't have 3, 4, 5 million lives. You have the only one. Mm. And the moment right now that you are living in, it will never, never be repeated. And it's your responsibility to live that moment the way you want it to and the way you will remember it. And it's your choice whether you'd like to sit on Instagram the whole day or smoke or drink or you'll go for a walk or read a book. It's your choice. And I'm not saying that using Instagram, scrolling or drinking is a bad thing. Not at all. For someone, it's a good thing. It's just, what do you really want? And if you don't want this, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm. And I love that analogy, like with, again, we all do things to, you know, unwind, and we all do and scroll, and some people drink and smoke and whatnot. But I was having a chat with somebody, one of my friends, my boy Ashley, he always just keeps sending me reels on Instagram. And I tell him, like, bro, stop sending me the reels. And he said, oh, it's a form of pebbling. It's me sharing something with you. I'm like, all right, cool, bro. but I kind of have a conversation with it because I create content. And I get annoyed with doom scrolling. And I, you know, sometimes I do it myself. But I kind of said to my boy Ash, I said, Ash, you send me reels of people that have created content. And a lot of our friends and family watch reels and content. I said, but I want to be the person that creates the content that people watch. I don't want to be watching others. What I want to do on social media is create something for people to help. That's the way I look at it versus, I don't know if it's an arrogant thought, but a lot of my friends have said, yeah, you watch other stuff to numb your mind. I want to create stuff that people watch. I don't watch people's stories or that much because I'm just focused on the content I create. And that's kind of how I disconnect and keep a healthy relationship with social media is, and again, I say this in the nicest way possible, but I just don't watch other people's shit. I don't consume myself because there is an element of comparison that may come into the head, which is, you know, we could definitely, I think we need to have a follow-up episode to this one because we can really go deep on sort of stuff. But Julia, it's been inspirational. It's been a privilege to freaking have you, you know, with our listeners. And I know our audience are going to have a lot of value from this. The question that I would beg to ask is if you could go back to that young Julia who was flyering and was looking to buy her phone, and obviously she's about to embark on a very tough journey, but what three bits of advice would you give to that younger version?
Stop and look around once in a while. You can do everything and you can achieve everything that you want. Just stop and think and rest. What else would I say? You're amazing. You don't understand that, but you're amazing and you are really powerful and you're just good enough not to prove that you're good enough to others. You don't need to prove anything.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And are there any shout outs or kudos that you'd like to give today?
Yeah. First of all, I would like to say and send big hugs to my best friend, Eugenia Chuprina, and to psychotherapy and my shrink for 7 years. I'm doing that as well. Maybe this is actually the secret. And to my husband, we've been through a lot with him. Oleg, love you. Thank you.
Big loves, big loves. Well, Julia, again, thank you. And thank you to our listeners, watchers, subscribers, and fans of the show today. As a reminder and a request for help here, if you've been listening to this episode on our local podcast platform, please give us a rating. Share this episode in the DMs of people that you think could benefit from the value that Julia has shared today. If you're watching this on our YouTube channel, please give us a like, comment, subscribe, or, you know, put your thoughts as to what you feel about Julia's experience in the comments below. We'd love to hear it. Then it helps with the algorithm and it just helps get this message out there. You will really help if you can do that. And as mentioned, Julia's LinkedIn profile and contact details will be within the show notes. If you want to connect with her to like pick her brain on any of the topics discussed today, please reach out. She's a lovely lady and that's why we brought her on board today. But Julia, from the bottom of my heart, from our listeners, fans and subscribers, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I wish you an awesome weekend and most importantly, as you know this with your mind, happy selling.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you for having me.